The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
May all your good fortunes be as numerous as blades of grass and then some.
The Vault. A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Gordon dives, and yes, he made that catch. A tremendous catch that robbed Chicago of two runs by the Gold Glover Alex Gordon.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future. This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, where you have your three favorite nerds, well, at least hopefully three of your favorite nerds, in on a Friday night. It is November 16th, 2012. Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. Trying some new technologies tonight, so we'll see how this turns out in the end. Let's go ahead. Let's start with the end and work our way back. Let's start with some non-Royals news. And I'll let you two kind of take this, and I'm going to go grab something off the laptop. But there was an article that came out today about the MVP race, which I'm going to be honest with you, I don't care about MVPs and rookies of the year and whatever, because it doesn't make a player better or worse. And that was something that I took from Kevin Goldstein, and I completely agree. You know, we get really hung up on this. And as Kansas City fans, we really had no dog in the race on this, but all of a sudden all the stat geeks came out in full force because there was a little article wrote that kind of upset a few of them, including our good friend D.B. Lesky, who apparently has more of a life than we do, and he's out somewhere on a Friday night. And
loser.
What a jerk. So we're going to talk a little bit about the Mitch Albom article, and I'm going to let the boys set that up, and they're going to talk about that and go on a little bit of a rant, and then I will join in towards the end of this to pick on them a little bit. So, guys, Mike, take it away.
Well, I mean, as everybody knows by now, Miguel Cabrera of the Detroit Tigers was named MVP. The thing that I think surprised people, you know, he won the Triple Crown. He had a great year. You can't say anything bad about the performance that he had in 2012 at all. I mean, you just can't. He had a great season. And he is deserving of the MVP. I think most people, though, think that he wasn't the most deserving of the MVP. And that's kind of where this comes in. You know, if you look at the numbers, Cabrera did very, you know, he led batting average, home runs, and RBIs. Mike Trout wasn't too far off in a lot of those. He was right up there in batting average, right up there, you know, in homers, and didn't drive in nearly as many runs, but he scored a lot more than anybody else in the majors. And he did this by missing the first 5 weeks of the year as well.
Well Mike, I got it pulled up, so we'll jump. Okay. I'll jump in here just for your point here.
Okay.
Miguel Cabrera's batting average was .330. Mike Trout hit .326. On-base percentage, Miguel Cabrera, .393. Well, we're not going to talk about that because that's not part of the Triple Crown. So we'll just stick with the Triple Crown. And then let's see. Home runs, Miguel Cabrera at 44. Mike Trout had 30 in 22 less games.
Yep.
And RBIs, Miguel Cabrera at 139 and Mike Trout had 83. Again, in 22 less games. So continue, sorry.
Right, but if you look at what Trout did as far as scoring runs, he scored 20 more runs than Cabrera, 20 more runs than the next closest guy, and he did this after starting the year in AAA, which was, you know, it's clear by now he was definitely ready for the major leagues if he could have an MVP caliber season. You know, it's interesting to see how good he would be if he'd have been able to play the full year. But, you know, unfortunately, that's not what we get to work with. We can't work on those hypotheticals. When you take everything offensively, let's say that Cabrera has the better power numbers, and he does. Let's look at Trout and say that he's got the better speed and base running numbers, and he does. You can't necessarily wash those out because they're different aspects. But when you add in things like defense, you know, that matters. That's significant. And he was a Gold Glove caliber center fielder as a rookie. Center field, much tougher position, much more important position on the field than third base, where Cabrera was, he got credit because he was average. know, if people expect him to be below average and he exceeds those expectations, he's getting credit for that. And, you know, again, it's not to say that he's not a good player. It's just that, you know, when you add everything together, Trout was easily more deserving of the award. Even if you take a look at how the teams performed, the Angels won more games in a tougher division, and they had won a greater percentage of the games while Trout was there than the Tigers did all season. So this column comes out by Mitch Albom, who's, you know, he's been with ESPN in the past. You know, he's written various different things. He's written novels. He's all over the place. And basically he comes out and calls stat people and people who appreciate, you know, some of the advanced stats like WAR and weighted on base average and things like that, and basically tells us we're all computer nerds, we all need to get rid of the slide rule, things like that. If you're watching on YouTube, Jeff Herr has labeled himself as a blogger and also afraid of the sun, because the implication is that we don't get out. And you know, we're kind of helping feed that stereotype now because we're doing a podcast on a Friday night. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The point remains that he's basically going against this community of people who appreciate the stats and saying that that's all that we look at.
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough for me to decide where I want to begin with this, but I'm just going to start going here, and I'll start with saying Mitch Albom is a turd. And I'm going to say that because and I put that out on Twitter, where I didn't use that language exactly, but I said, you know, I'm not going to dissect the article and why Mitch Albom is wrong and what he's saying, mm-hmm. but I just think it's a joke. And the question, and I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't say why Mitch Albom is wrong. I should just say why I didn't like the article. And people were like, oh, why didn't you like it? Is it just because you didn't agree with them or he didn't agree with you? And I said, no, absolutely not, because I've always said that this huge stat geek versus scout versus, you know, normal fan, whatever argument is, it's stupid. But I think I've always said there's room for both, and you have to have both. It's not like you can make a concession for one or the other. You need both of them, because there are things that you can't see with numbers, and there are things that you can't see with your eyes. And the very idea that one side is discounted, I think is completely stupid. And that's what I didn't agree with about his article, is that he put it out there like you have to make a choice, and that there is a choice to make, and he's basically pushing fans to make this choice when there isn't a choice to be made. You can choose to take both of them. I mean, I've said it before earlier this week, all this MVP talk, it doesn't matter who wins. It's just like Troy said, they're both great players. Mm-hmm. They're both had amazing seasons. And like you said, Mike, Miguel Cabrera was absolutely deserving of winning the MVP. Was Mike Trout more deserving? Yeah, he probably was. You know, I probably think it's a little bit closer than a lot of people, but I still think Mike Trout was more deserving. But it's not outlandish to me that Miguel Cabrera wins. And mm-hmm. I think it's a situation where you shouldn't be forced to have to decide whether you want to be with the stat geeks or whether you want to be with the, you know, people who see with their eyes or whatever. And I don't like that idea. It creates a division when, in actuality, and actually the biggest problem I had with it too, not only does he discount one side, but he basically says that they're not proper fans mm-hmm. with the way that, because people look at stats. I've got the article pulled up here.
Yeah, it says something about how people who watch baseball as a sport.
Yeah, it's right in the first. It's right in like the first paragraph.
It's just like
he says, okay, in a battle of computer analysis versus people who still watch baseball as, you know, a sport, what we saw mm-hmm. with our Detroit vision was what most of whatever blah blah blah. It's like saying that just because people pay attention to stats, myself included, that we don't watch baseball as a sport or that we're not a fan on the same level as him, it's asinine. It's completely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. The idea that you're going to try and just put, you know, you're either one side or the other, that I've said, it boggles my mind how someone who's been around the sport of baseball for so long, who's been in sports reporting so much, as like someone like Mitch Albom just would make this kind of argument that's just classless and baseless and stupid by trying to just alienate so many people. And I'm not sure when this argument will ever be over, and it probably won't ever be over. But, I mean, this just the whole idea, it's just he kind of encapsulates this big rivalry that's going on that I just don't agree with. I mean, I don't understand why it has to be one or the other, you know. And this is kind of, to bring it back to a little bit more of a Royals angle, this is one of the reasons why we're so frustrated with the Royals, is because the Royals kind of embody that argument a little bit. You know, it's more of the, you know, this is the way it's done type of a thing. It doesn't have to be that way. You know what? Just win ball games. Who cares that you do it? And if you can evaluate players, and if you do it by just your eyes and you don't look at any numbers at all, and you get the best players and they win MVPs, fantastic. But if you do it just by numbers, that's great too. If you do it with a combination of both, you know, it doesn't really matter. And it's just the whole thing I just thought was completely ridiculous. And I can't even believe, you could tell the guy didn't do any of his research. He didn't look into it. And one of the last points I'll make here on my little rant is how he talks about, he says something to the effect of, is there any other sport that invents so many new ways to watch the same game? Which is completely ridiculous. It's like, did he even sit and think for a second before he wrote this article? I mean, absolutely every sport does this. You have player efficiency rankings in basketball. In basketball, they have these player efficiency rankings. I don't even know what the hell they are, but I know people have them and people look at them. There are sites that do advanced statistics on basketball. There's Football Outsiders and places like Pro Football Focus that do advanced stats for football. There's something called a DVOA, which is defense value over adjustment or something like that for football players, that basically takes the outcome of every play ever in this typical scenario and judges a play. And it's this really, really, really complicated stat. And it's not as widespread as like your baseball stats are, but it's increasing every year. And you know, there's all kinds of advanced statistics and different statistical models that people use in all these different sports to try and look at them a different way. And actually, it all started with baseball. So baseball was kind of a pioneer with the whole thing. And the whole point is, it allows you a different way to look at the game. And it allows you to gain a greater understanding. You know, I used to think kind of like this article was, you know, 5, 10 years ago or so, I used to think that all the statistics were a barrier to baseball, to understand or to truly enjoy the game. But once I really decided, okay, you know what, I should know what these people are talking about, just for my own sake, I actually started to realize, okay, now I like this stuff and I want to know more about it because it helps me understand. It helps me realize what's going on in the game that I can't typically see from watching, you know, as many games as I do. And that's the whole point, and that's what was sorely missed by Mitch Albom and all the people that agree with what he said, I think.
Yeah, I like that you bring up that idea of a choice, because you don't have to choose between just watching the player and what they do and just looking at the computer. You know, they say the game's not played on a spreadsheet. Well, no, but you don't mean it to be played on the spreadsheet. That's the whole point. You know, you can take a look at a guy like, you know, take a look at Eric Hosmer, and you watch his swing, and you can sit there and say, well, you know, he looks every bit the part. But why isn't he being successful? Billy Beane pretty much takes this entire argument in every spot, because he came up, he was second overall pick, he looked exactly like you would expect an all-star major league player to look like, and he couldn't do it. And then as a general manager, he goes with the complete opposite idea that you can't just look at a player and judge how good they're going to be. You have to look at what they've actually done on the field. And the way that you measure somebody's performance is through these stats. And stats have been in baseball since the late 19th century. I mean, you know, baseball stats are older than automobiles. You know, it's ridiculous. You can't discount them. They're using stats like the Triple Crown to validate, you know, this whole argument that, okay, well, he won the Triple Crown, so you can't just look at the war.
But I'm going to interrupt you there.
One quick thing, too, is I think when you look at it, what is one of the things that people say is that I happen to disagree with, but that's a different conversation. But one of the things that people say that makes baseball so great is how it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You know, it's over 162 games. It's every single day. It's day in, day out. You know, it's 4 or 5 at-bats a game. It's 100 pitches for a pitcher or for a starting pitcher in a game and so on and so forth. Well, you know, why try and make a momentary decision on a game that's based on so much longevity just within its own season? You know, that's why statistics are so valuable and so much more valuable in baseball than other sports, is because you have to be able to see over a long period of time, and you just can't do that with your eyes. Even if you're out there every day, there are just things that you just cannot see, even if you watch 162 games in a row. That's why the stats are helpful.
But here's my thing, and can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry about the echo earlier. I'm doing some live testing as we go. So my apologies to the listeners. But, you know, the Triple Crown has to matter, though. I thought it was a slam dunk when he hits the Triple Crown. He's the MVP, period. Mike Trout had one of the greatest rookie years in history. Absolutely. No, I take nothing from Mike Trout. He's going to be a great player in this industry for 15, 20 years probably. Going to be amazing. Hall of Famer. We can give it to him this year. Put him in next year and let him play. I don't care. You know, he's going to be one of the greatest players we've seen in a long, long time. There's no doubt in my mind about it. We saw it, you know, throughout the year when they came to town, when Kansas City went out there. But there's got to be a lot given to the Triple Crown. And you know, I kind of took up not really taking Albom's side because he's an idiot. But here's the thing. And here's what we're missing out of this, guys. You know why people like Nick Scott get a lot of followers and have a lot of following, and people like the old Royals Review had a great following? Because they will take the most controversial side of any topic and take the most idiotic approach to it.
It's the Rush Limbaugh approach.
Yes.
I think everybody who reads about baseball read that column today. So, you know, he might not even believe what he wrote, but he wrote, you know, whatever he said, and it got everybody all worked up.
But that's what Kamler does so well. You know, he figures out what that less element is, and he runs with it, and it works for him. You know, it always has. And that's what's made him so well known. And that's not taking anything from Chris. That's not making Chris any less intelligent or anything else, but it's the angle that people are going to read. How many people do you think clicked on his article today versus the article he wrote the last time? You know, how much do you think his hits were up?
I don't even know he was writing about sports anymore. I thought he was just writing about, you know, novels about people who go to heaven.
So my thing is, I think you take the Triple Crown into account, and one of the things that Jeff wanted to argue with me on that is, then why can't you take any three stats and say, well, that's that? Because those three stats haven't been tracked since the beginning of baseball, and they haven't been a title put to those.
That's not exactly what I was saying, The Triple Crown, no one's trying to discount that. You know, I think if you say you're just trying to discount the Triple Crown, I think that kind of still falls into that having to make a choice type of a thing. I think people are just taking an approach that I don't want to put it this way, but the stat geeks will say like a more enlightened approach, which I don't think it's more enlightened. You know, I just think it's different. But an approach where it's just those stats just aren't as important as they once were, simply because we know more about the game than we once did. So that's the whole idea. I mean, if there was no such thing as this Triple Crown ever invented, if everything in baseball was exactly the same, but nobody ever just decided to make those three stats so important, what would happen right now? You'd just be like, oh, well, Miguel Cabrera led the league in these three categories.
But that's not how it is. They are stats. It's a title in baseball that's beloved. It is something that matters.
Right.
And you're right. Should those three stats matter any more than any other three stats? Probably not. But the fact of the matter is they do. And that makes a difference to the average fan. It makes a difference to the, you know, to the whole picture. But the bottom line, at the end of the day, is Miguel Cabrera a better player? Is Mike Trout a worse player because one won the MVP and one didn't?
No.
Okay.
No.
So at the end of the day, y'all read an article that got you really angry over nothing.
it's not just nothing. It's the thinking behind it. It's discounting this entire idea of how to evaluate players that's counter to what 90 years of sports writing has said, just because this guy, you know, made his fame in the 80s, and now it's a whole different generation of people writing in a different way and evaluating in a different way. You know, if he tipped his hat to the value behind advanced statistics, it'd be totally different. But he didn't. He took it as if it's marginalized. He took it as if it doesn't mean anything, that our opinion is just crazy, that we don't even watch the games. And I would almost wager that I've been to more baseball games in the last 5 years than Mitch Albom.
And on top of that, Mike, it's the platform with which he does it. I mean, the dude, I don't follow him on Twitter. I haven't even looked at his profile. I think he's on there, but I don't even know. And I'm sure he's got 100,000 followers or whatever, and tons of people follow him.
Assuming he's even on Twitter.
Exactly. Tons of people probably read his articles all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, when you have that kind of a platform and that many people, you owe it to the people that read your stuff to be more responsible in what you – okay, he's got – I'll pull it up now. He's got 29,000 followers on Twitter, and who knows how many more that read his stuff in the Detroit Free Press. So, mm-hmm. You know, he as a journalist, he has a responsibility to be more cognizant of what he's writing and to the people that are going to read it. And I know ultimately you're probably right, Troy. He probably is taking that Rush Limbaugh approach and just saying, you know what? I'm going to get a bunch of people riled up, and people are going to be talking about me for a while here. And this was his opportunity. If you were going to make a play, that was the right play. But, you know, maybe we're just falling into the trap. But ultimately, I mean, I think there is still valid points to be made.
Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh,
Mitch Albom,
Nick Scott. People that will get you to click because they say or do something crazy. Am I wrong?
That's really true.
And that, at the end of the day, is what is going to make the difference on this. So I think we're going to take a break here. I'm going to test out a couple of things as we're going to break. But we will be right back.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
May all your good fortunes be as numerous as blades of grass and then some.
The Vault.
Hey, Troy, what are you doing this weekend?
I'm going to grab a beer somewhere. What do you have in mind?
I heard about this awesome new bar downtown. It's called Rage. The waitresses have a contest to see who has the most piercing.
No, man, that's not really my scene.
Well, there's another bar close by called Spit Cup. Check it out. The bartenders wear chaps, and every hour they shoot a guy.
No, seriously, I just want a bar where I can sit down and watch the game.
Okay, I've got just the place. It's called Lilac. You sit on pillows, drink from eucalyptus leaves.
No, Ned, but I just want a place where I can get a cheap drink and watch the football game.
Okay, I got it. This place, it's got a TV. It's called 816.
Libidotosis.
Yep. All their drinks come in NBA hats.
Man, I just want a place like Kelly's.
Oh, you mean Kelly's Westport Inn? No, they've got all the basketball and bowl game. They've even got a heated roof. The view is really nice, too, if you know what I'm saying. Why didn't you just say you wanted to go to Kelly's?
Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road. Make it your place to go any time of the week. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I don't know, I'm trying to do some different things with music and stuff here. It's getting to be a bit of a long show for us, even though if you're listening on the download, you're not hearing much. If you want to see all the behind-the-scenes stuff, you can check us out at Royal Man, or YouTube.com/Royal Man Report. Of course, check out kingsofkaufman.com and EKOHnetwork.com. Some quick hits here, guys, and I think we'll run through this show pretty quick unless there's something here you guys want to get into deeply. I think there might be a couple of things on here, actually. But a quick hit. You were reading in the Bill James Library, Mike, that this gentleman, Billy Butler, is quite the player, according to him. And recently he was awarded the Silver Slugger Award.
It's pretty good.
So, I mean,
yeah.
How big
Which
of a
pretty
deal
impressive.
Is it? How big of a deal is it that he won the Silver Slugger?
As big a deal as we want to make
it. I mean, it's like we were talking about before. It's big, it's a ton, but it's significant. I mean, the Royals haven't won a Silver Slugger in quite some time, so for Billy Butler to get some recognition, it's great. You know, he had a great season. He was one of the best designated hitters in baseball. He had career highs in home runs and RBIs. One of the what can you say? I mean, the guy's missed, and he's missed 11 games since 2009 total over four seasons. So, you know, you look at a guy like him who can, you know, take a walk, who can get a bunch of doubles, you know, 60 plus extra base hits every season. You know, this is just a great season for him. And, you know, he won the Silver Slugger Award. He also won the Royals Player of the Year Award. So, very deserving of that as well.
Yeah, and I mean, just kind of echo Mike's sentiment there. He won Royals Player of the Year, like you said. You know, some people disagreed with it, pulling the Alex Gordon argument. I wouldn't necessarily argue that, but, you know, I think Billy Butler definitely deserved it.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same Cabrera-Trout argument almost over again. But, I mean, right now, and you... The Silver Slugger, if anything, it highlights the importance that Billy Butler has to this particular team. And I think that's one of the big things that when you look at Billy Butler has to be taken into account. He holds a lot of value to a lot of teams, but he holds the most value to the Royals simply because of who the Royals are and who Billy Butler is. So, I mean, if anything, it just kind of hammers that point home of just how valuable a piece Billy Butler is to what the Royals are trying to build here.
Yeah, and if you want a little advanced stat here to kind of go along with all this, since that's kind of the theme for today, Billy Butler, eighth in the American League in RBI percentage, which is how often he drives in a run when the opportunity is there. That's ahead of guys like Albert Pujols and Adrian Beltre, who got votes in the MVP ballot at the end of the year. So, you know, anybody who said that Billy wasn't a run producer in the past – you're dead wrong. So, sorry. Clint Robinson can't do the same thing that Billy Butler does. It's never going to happen.
And so. that kind of goes hand-in-hand with and that's kind of another advanced statistic that shows you a little bit kind of behind what you would normally see, which is you normally see that RBI number, but that's the problem a lot of people have with the RBI statistic, that it's largely dependent on what other people do. Because... Yep. If there's nobody on base, you can't hit them in. And while it's still a valuable asset to be able to hit when you have runners on in scoring position and things like that, you know, that's not necessarily – RBIs don't tell the whole picture as far as how good of a hitter and things like that you are. So there's – you know, that's kind of just another one of those things that I think with the Triple Crown, I think the RBI is the stats that people have the biggest problems with, because batting average definitely is – you know, that's a singular, that person, he has the most impact over that. Same with home runs. But the RBIs is the one thing that, you know, you might be hamstrung by being on a bad team or, you know, being in a weird spot in the order or something like that.
And just for comparison's sake, Miguel Cabrera, third in RBI percentage in the AL. Mike Trout, fourth. So there's about... 0.81% difference between the two. So, you know, whatever. I mean, you can make the stats say anything you like.
Yeah.
Right there, they say that they're both very, very good. Anyway, we don't need to rehash that whole argument.
I already said they were both very, very good. I thought that was the last 5 minutes before the break was about. Brandon Wood is picked up by the Royals. He's a former number three overall prospect. Granted, that was 6 years ago, but he nevertheless... You know, and one thing that we talked about behind the scenes a lot was the Royals seem to have this love of picking up players that are, you know, are projects. And it's worked. Let's take nothing from it. Jonathan Broxton flipped for good talent. You know, there's been plenty that have come along through this way, and we've seen the Royals sign them, build them up, trade them off, get some great pieces in return. And then some trades with their homegrown players, like Mike Aviles, they trade for not nearly enough, which has become apparent after he's been traded the last couple of times. But here we go again, another reclamation project. What are your thoughts on Brandon Wood, Mike?
Well, it's a little bit different with Brandon Wood than, say, Chris Volstad, who we talked about last month as a pickup. It's a little different than going after Guillermo Moscoso. You know, they're going after Brandon Wood. It's a minor league deal. They're not really expecting him to supplant anybody. They're not looking for him to be a big contributor. But if they get something out of him, well, then they're – you know, there's nothing to lose there. You know, this is a guy, he's not even 28 years old yet. He's been a pro for years already. And like you said, he's a former number three overall prospect, according to Baseball America. He's, you know, somebody who had a ton of power in the minor leagues. Former first-round pick from the 2003 draft, 23rd overall, you know, 6'3", 205. You know, there's something to at least go after here. It's there's hardly any investment. You're not signing him to take over for Mike Moustakas. You're not signing him to do anything. But, you know, if he does something in Omaha and hits well, and, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to move another player and he can carry it on at the major league level, well, then you've got something for nothing. It's kind of like signing Melky Cabrera for a very cheap contract and getting career – well, what looked like at the time a career year out of him. It's kind of like getting Luis Mendoza for cash and getting, you know, a league average season out of him, you know, where you're basically taking on zero real big commitment, but the upside is still there. And with Brandon Wood, you know, I'd say there's like a 5% chance he turns into anything significant, but that's better than the 0% chance that somebody like Kevin Kuzmanoff would have been last year.
Yeah. And I agree, and I think possibly, I'm not even going to say high reward, but you could possibly get a reward and literally infinitesimal risk, you know, very small. But here's a problem I have with the Brandon Wood move, and, you know, I feel like I might be on repeat here, at least not necessarily in this show, but just over the course of how long we've done this show, is that just like anything we've talked about, it's not the move in and of itself that really bothers me so much as it is just kind of that move in conjunction with everything the Royals have done and everything that we know about the Royals as an organization. And, I mean, I think there's a slight difference between you take a player like a Rick Ankiel or like a Jonathan Broxton or Jeff Francoeur, Melky Cabrera, whoever, that you signed to like a one-year deal and then you flip them really quick. I mean, people that have a lot of major league experience and are, you know, major league level players, but might not be performing as high as they could, you know, still have some upside. You know, there's a difference between those types of players, at least in my opinion, versus someone who has more or less been a career minor leaguer and has never really developed even to an average minor league player, average major league player, but still possibly could have some upside. And I think the major difference there becomes, well, you know, there might be a way to take a player like your Jeff Francoeur and kind of tweak some things and get him back to having a good season like he once had, like he did in 2011. But then with Brandon Wood, there's a developmental issue, which is different than – sorry, I saw my eye. I probably look weird. But there's a developmental issue that, you know, they still need development more so than just minor tweaks. And the biggest problem that we've had that we've talked about on this show seemingly nonstop is just the Royals can't develop players, and they don't have a sound, solid, consistent developmental program. So the idea that they can take someone that another organization couldn't do anything with and turn them into a player that nobody saw coming, like a Brandon Wood, and more to the point, like a Chris Volstad or something, even though Volstad's been in the majors a little bit longer. You know, that whole idea that this Royals have this ill-conceived notion that they can do something that other teams can't, well, they've proven that they can't do it. So the idea that they still keep taking these chances and still trying to do that, it just shows, you know, it's just them banging their head against the wall. It's not going to get them anywhere until they either, one, decide to change their developmental process and try and figure out why things haven't been working, or two, stop trying to do all these reclamation projects and just go out and spend some money. So, I mean, I'm not going to get into a huge thing about this. I'm not mad about the thing, but I just think if you really look deeper, there is something that you can kind of uncover just about all the Royals' moves. They all kind of some way or another sneak back to this bigger issue that's more of a developmental organization-wide issue. And that's kind of what I look at when I see a move like that. But overall, it's not got me mad. I'm not going to throw a fit about it or anything. So, but it's just something that you could to kind of put on the radar there to kind of look at.
How dare they sign Brandon Wood?
I can't believe the Royals would do something so stupid.
Yeah, I think you're right, though, in the pitching side of things. These who are 18, 19, they're 20. You know, these guys haven't developed into any kind of major league pitcher yet, or 22, 23. You know, that's a problem. You have to be able to get those guys. If you can't get them at that point, how are you going to fix them? And that's kind of what the question is there that you're talking about. And
Mike Montgomery called. He said the Royals have no problem developing players at all.
I'm sure he said that. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm going to use that to snowball into our next point here. And talk about Mike Montgomery. And this wasn't necessarily super recent, but I want to say maybe a week ago, a week and a half ago, Sports Illustrated, their issue, they had a trades that should be made section, and not necessarily trades that they think are going to happen, and these aren't actually, you know, like MLB trade rumors type rumors, but they're just hypothetical situations where they say, hey, you know what, this would work out well for both teams. One of the trades they proposed was the Royals hooking up with the Tampa Bay Rays, and I'm already starting to shake.
Like...
And the proposed trade was Alex Gordon, Johnny Giovitella, and Mike Montgomery for, you guessed it, David Price, which just the mere thought just about made my head explode. So the idea, if this is something that the Royals would actually consider, would be phenomenal. And, you know, I would gladly part with those three players. I think the Rays would probably laugh at that. I don't think that's nearly enough for someone like David Price, just because he's so talented. And there's no pitcher that's doing what he's doing. I mean, he just won the Cy Young. So, Alex Gordon is very, very good, and the Rays need offense badly. But just getting Alex Gordon and a guy like Johnny Giovitella, who doesn't project a ton, and Mike Montgomery, but... What I really want to focus on is Mike Montgomery there, which kind of pulls from our last issue, in that, you know, almost taking away the monumental head-exploding aspect of me possibly owning a David Price Royals jersey, if you take that away from the situation, what interests me most about that hypothetical is the Mike Montgomery aspect, because the Rays have shown a consistent and proven ability to develop young pitching. I don't know what they do, and I've tried to kind of get to the bottom of it and use some of the contacts that we've had on the show and whatnot, like Alan Yeager, and talk to people that know, and you can't really get an exact feel on what the Rays do that's so successful. And my guess would be it's nothing, in the sense that the Rays come in and they say, you do what you need to do, and we'll help you and try and tweak what you do to make it even better. More so than what the Royals do, which is, no, do it this way. And that'd be my guess. But anyway, the point is, Mike Montgomery has struggled and struggled and struggled, and it keeps getting worse. And that's even what they said in Sports Illustrated, is that he could use a change of scenery. And I'd be so curious, not only with the Rays, but with an organization like the Rangers or somebody else that's been able to develop pitching, the A's, one of those organizations, to get a player like Mike Montgomery and see what they could do with him. Because, say, the Rays made that trade in the offseason, and they took Mike Montgomery. I mean, what if by the end of 2013, or maybe the beginning of 2014, Montgomery comes up and he's just another one of that young stable of pitching? Everyone can be like, I feel like, you know, the way I am, whenever the Rays just come up with a new pitcher, you know, it's Jeremy Hellickson 1 year, and then it's Matt Moore the next, and it was Alex Cobb before that, and whoever. And then it's like people will be like, where did this Mike Montgomery guy come from? And I'll be like, oh, well, they got him in the David Price trade. You know, that would just – if there'd ever be a truer indictment that the Royals just fail at player development, that would be it. And so, you know, like I said, besides the monumental David Price aspect, I would just be so interested to see – if another team could take a very talented player like that and develop them into a, you know, to a point where the Royals fail.
Well, I think it could happen, and I wouldn't mind having David Price here. And I think you would trade those three guys and then trade us to two human slave traders to get David Price here. So I think you would do about everything you could. Staying on trades, there were two small trades made. Hometown boy and guest of the program, Tommy Hottaby, was traded for cash, as was Jeremy Jeffress.
Yeah, Hottaby was traded to the Rangers. The Royals got cash for him. They also got a player to be named later, so who knows who that's going to end up being, but you know, it's a little extra for him. And Jeffress was traded to the Blue Jays for cash, which is, you know, basically they were both designated for assignment, taken off the 40-man roster. The Royals had 10 days to trade them, send them to the minors, or just outright release them. And they ended up finding trade partners, so they got a little bit of something out of them. You know, otherwise they would have just lost him completely, which, you know, Jeffress, I think he's another guy who kind of needs a change of scenery. Hottaby, the Rangers must have some idea for him. He did pitch pretty well ERA-wise and whatnot. He's left-handed. He can be a lefty specialist. So maybe they'll use him in that role, get him 30, 40 innings a year or something like that. You know, they weren't really in the long-term plans or anything. At the same time, Jason Bourgeois was designated for assignment with those two. Nobody wanted to trade for him. Surprise, surprise. Go figure. And the Royals were going to send him to the minors, but he had the right to refuse and become a free agent, so he's a free agent. So,
and he tweeted free. I don't think he wanted to be in the Kansas City system. He was not happy here, I got from that.
And you know,
well, we weren't happy having him either. So,
right. But if the Astros and the Royals don't want you, who the hell does?
No kidding. So. The Marlins want him.
Yeah, let's go there.
I bet he makes
the Marlins have been very active in the trade market this week, and they traded pretty much their entire team to the Blue Jays for a whole bunch of prospects. And it really doesn't matter who they traded or what they got, except for Josh Johnson going to Toronto, because that was somebody the Royals kind of. Or Royals fans wanted the Royals to go after, but we'd have screwed him up for sure. But the bigger part of this is once again, now under two different owners, the Marlins have done monumental fire sales. And all of a sudden, Toronto looks like they're going to try to compete in the AL East, which makes it four legitimate teams up there competing for a playoff spot, which actually might work against them because – those teams are going to be so good, and they play each other 18 times a year. They're going to beat the snot out of each other. But what I take from this trade and the route I want to go with this is they have got to take baseball. And I know the Players Union will never allow this to happen, but baseball has got to come out of South Florida. It's got to – they've got – there's people that argue you keep Tampa Bay because they get such great TV ratings that you got to keep them. But, you know, Glass is getting up there in years. MLB buys the Royals for fair market value, hands it over to the Tampa Bay ownership. You create free agents out of Tampa Bay and Miami. You use the current draft order. You draft these teams, and you just get rid of them and go back to 28 teams. It'd be the best for baseball. Baseball does not belong in Florida. We have shown it time and time again. Tampa Bay can't draw fans with a winning team, and the Marlins don't really seem to do either, and their ownership is such a mess. Loria does not deserve a team. I think that's fair to say. There's other people that have definitely agreed with that on Twitter and in major media. I mean, at this point, what has to happen down there in South Florida?
I don't even know what they can do is the problem. I mean, Loria, man, this guy is slick, I got to tell you, because he was running the Expos. He was the owner of the Montreal Expos. And they got to the point where they weren't going to remain in Montreal. Major League Baseball bought the team for $120 million. So Loria gets $120 million, and then he gets a loan, goes down, and ends up buying the Marlins. So he basically got the Marlins for nothing. And then, you know, goes out and signs all these big free agents. Brings them out, you know, Heath Bell, Mark Burley, Jose Reyes, all these guys. And, you know, they opened this new stadium last year, which is like 80% funded by the taxpayers of Miami. and they finished with 69 wins. So that's their justification to go out and trade these guys. They traded $160 million in contracts to the Blue Jays, which is just ridiculous. And now they're sitting there with, you know, basically this team of minor league type guys and a bunch of scrubs. And, you know, I think their payroll's at $16 million right now as far as their commitments for next year. So, I mean, they just went out and they basically started over. It's kind of just crazy. And if I were a Marlins fan, I would not give them 1 cent. I mean, we talk a lot about, you know, boycotting David Glass and the Royals and things like that and going for those kinds of things. But, you know, at least they're not doing this kind of thing.
But, Mike, how many world championships do the Marlins have since the last Royals World Championship?
Oh, they've got two.
So,
I know. I mean,
be mad all you want. Be mad all you want. They're winning, period.
Yeah. Which, so. And who knows? I mean, but it makes you wonder. It's like, what can you get out of just going out and spending like this and bringing in guys who have the talent? You know, you can always trade them later and get a lot of talent back. You know, that's how the Marlins got a lot of the good players that they had before. Hanley Ramirez was a trade guy, and you know all these other players. I don't know. I don't know what baseball can do about it, but it's a little shocking. I am interested about if it was any other team who did it and not the Marlins with their history and kind of with that context hanging over them, if there would be this kind of outrage.
If the Red Sox would have been, the sellers instead of the buyers,
And nobody was really all that outraged when the Red Sox did it in over the summer when they traded, you know, Adrian Gonzalez and Carl Crawford and Josh Beckett over to the Dodgers
or the Phillies.
There was no such outrage. So, or even when the Astros, when they were trading off guys who had big contracts and getting a bunch of prospects, you know, it looked like very clear idea of rebuilding. So, you know, I think there's a stigma attached to it as well. But still, you know, these are guys who they signed, they got 1 year out of them and they traded them off. And you know, so you know, they've got 5-6 years left on their contracts. And they have to, you know, they're going to play at a place that they hadn't necessarily agreed to play at. It's, I don't know, it's complicated. More and more, I think it's just crazy. Is what it is.
Well, let's stay on this because not only, and I don't have it in front of me. I guess I'm a poorly prepared podcast host. That's a lot of P's. But you know, they got pretty much everybody that the Marlins had that mattered: Josh Johnson, Mark Burley, Jose Reyes, and was there anybody else of evident in that trade?
John Buck, right?
Yeah, John Buck.
John Buck. How did I miss him? My favorite Royals catcher in the last 10 years that isn't Sal Perez. You know, they're all going to Toronto, and that's a second stop for John Buck. He was there as the starter to the kid that they have there now, Aparicio, or whatever his name is.
Aaron Sibbie. I think he made an all-star team with him, didn't he? Or was that?
Buck made at least one all-star
team with the Blue Jays. So, yeah. I assume he'll be a backup/DH there, but, I mean, it's a good move for Buck. I'm happy for him. And then they sent away some really top-edge prospects for him. Some people say that the Marlins actually got the better part of the deal because they're not saddled with those veteran contracts. But, again, it's because they're the Marlins that they don't know that they're going to do anything and make it work. But then the Blue Jays, who I'm all for the Blue Jays becoming a winner. Don't get me wrong, they haven't won since Joe Carter. Again, that's since the Royals have, but they haven't won since Joe Carter. You know, I would love to see the Blue Jays become a team that wins, but then you go and you sign Melky Cabrera for $16 million over 2 years. And ladies and gentlemen, cheaters do prosper. Because not only that, Tennessee football gets another 2 years of probation. And Lane Kiffin's over in USC and joining the Sun and the Bikini Babes and getting off scot-free. So cheaters do prosper. Don't let anybody ever tell you otherwise, because even Ryan Verdugo remarked on Twitter about how obviously taking PEDs works, because you can look at Melky Cabrera. And then what's his name from MLB Radio said, and ESPN goes, but he would have gotten $40 million over 4 years if he wouldn't have got caught. He wouldn't have got anything if he wouldn't have used. We've seen the history of Melky Cabrera. We know the player that he is, and now he's rich beyond his wildest dreams. Well, maybe not his wildest dreams, but beyond our wildest dreams because we're not professional baseball players. But he's got a World Series ring, he got a World Series share, and he gets a two-year deal, and that's crap. And sports really needs to check it and make these players accountable. And you got to do something more than this. And you got to be smarter than that because he's not going to be that good the next couple of years, and Toronto's going to be saddled with that money, and they don't have money coming out of their ears to spend. So I don't know. That's my rant for the day.
Troy, I think piggybacking on top of that, and there was something that you hit on earlier when you're talking about the Marlins trade, and it was something about how baseball, you know, something's wrong with baseball, something that I can't remember what your words were. But point being, I think this is all kind of part of this. We've kind of touched on it a little bit in this show, and it's mostly just kind of part of the deal, and it's going to be here for a while. As far as baseball inequality, and it's something that, you know, I think people just kind of accept it and they move on. But ultimately, and this, I think it was last week sometime, God, I can't remember what exactly the topic was, but I was talking with DB Lesky on Twitter, and I mentioned something about how, you know, a ridiculous contract for somebody. Or it was like a proposed hypothetical for a free agent. I can't remember who it was, and it was too high was what he was saying. And I said, yeah, it's just a symptom of the wildly inefficient marketplace that baseball is. And I think this all kind of all the trades and all these contracts and everything and how I mean it all kind of fits into it. I mean, what other sport would someone like Melky Cabrera get $8 million a year? You know, you look at the NFL, I mean, I don't even know if Aaron Rodgers is making $8 million a year. Tom Brady gets out-earned by his girlfriend, his wife. And sports, as far as sports go, you know, if you ask me, I mean, football, you should be getting paid more, and it should be guaranteed like baseball is, but it's not because the careers are shorter and it's a much more dangerous game.
Yeah, but baseball
has. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, baseball has all these huge contracts and things like that, and even their average players like Melky Cabrera. He had a fantastic season last year. You know, we don't know how much of it was him and how much of it was product of the Peds. But I'm kind of rambling here. But I guess my ultimate point is not that we never do that on this show. But my ultimate point is just that, you know, I think Melky Cabrera, exactly what you're talking about. I think $8 million a year was too high. And I think it's just a symptom of what I think the Royals are kind of fighting now to bring it back to the Royals again, because you have players like Melky Cabrera that aren't going to be worth that money that are going to be out there that the Royals could use or that the Royals would target, more specifically pitchers, that the Royals won't be able to afford simply because the spending has gone so wildly out of control that the players are not valued correctly. But there are teams out there saying, like, oh, you know, say the Royals want to go after Jeremy Guthrie, and he says he wants 3 years, $34 million. Well, you know, the Royals are going to say, we can't pay that. Maybe the Atlanta Braves will say, yeah, we can pay that. Come on over. You know, it's more than we want to spend, but – you know, we'd rather do that than have you go somewhere else and possibly pitch against us. You know, I mean, when there are teams out there that can pull the trigger like that, then it distorts everything, and it just makes it such a muddied kind of a situation where it's not good for anybody.
But the market efficiency is there in baseball without a doubt. But you have seen the Orioles be successful. You've even seen the Pirates show some success and then trail off. You know, we've seen the Rangers, before they spent a lot of money, be successful. Now they can spend money. They got a great TV contract, and that's letting them spend money. They were never a spender until now. The Blue Jays have never been a spender until now.
The Rays have got to be the best example.
Exactly.
I obviously have a huge man crush, or organization crush, could you say? I don't know, on the Rays. But
it's a little creepy.
But, I mean, yeah, I think they are the perfect example of – there's there's that you can either be the team that spends, we've heard this argument before, but you can either be the team that spends the most. You can be your Boston or your New York, or you can be like Tampa Bay, you can be like Texas before they started spending a ton of money, and you can say, hey, you know, we know who we are, like the Royals apparently say they do, and then try and develop talent and try and find that talent that nobody else is seeing, or find new ways of development that maybe teams aren't trying yet that's going to give you a leg up, like the Rays have done, like the A's have done, like the Orioles have done. And teams like the Royals just aren't doing it. And that's why the Royals are in the position they are. This is kind of a all-over-the-place conversation. But
at the end of the day, it comes back to good ownership, too. And if there was a salary cap in baseball, which there should be, and if there was a salary floor in baseball, which there should be, the union is going to have to give back some power. They have to give it back for the betterment of the game. But they won't as long as these owners are making stupid decisions like what is happening in Toronto right now. As long as these kind of things continue to happen, then baseball is going to allow them to happen because the market's there for it. And you're only as valuable as the market around you, and the market will bear it. But you look at football, and like you said, they don't have guaranteed contracts, and they should. Baseball, I don't mind the guaranteed contracts, but you make these owners be responsible for them with an actual salary cap, and you're going to see them come down in a hurry. And I think football, their players' union has never been as strong as the commissioner and the owners, and that's fine, you know. But, you know, you got to make things happen, and the football's made things happen. And you look what they did this year. They stood up and they said, this is what we want. And they came out with a deal that was beneficial to both sides. We got football in this last collective bargaining agreement. We got, you know, we have our sport. NHL can't seem to figure that out, which is unfortunate for them. But at the end of the day, baseball at some point is going to have to do this, or you need to do like soccer overseas, and you need to make like a Premier League and a secondary league, and the bottom six teams of the Premier League move down every year, and the top six of the secondary move up until you have legitimate working baseball. Because if all baseball cares about is New York and Texas and California, then so be it. Then let it be. But let's call it like it is. And let's, you know, so that people in the Midwest who are out of the market efficiency can watch our sports differently. But it comes down to ownership, because the Chiefs are playing by the same rules as the Patriots, same rules as the, you know, the Dolphins and the Browns, who are bad teams as well. But, you know, they're playing – you look around, Denver isn't necessarily have any more money to spend than the Chiefs. They've just got an ownership group that really cares about the team, that's in touch with the team. They've got management that has a face that can go out and tell a guy like Peyton Manning, I've done what you've done. I know what you want to be. I know the legacy you want to leave. Come here. We'll make it happen. And that's how you make teams like the Chiefs into a successful organization. You could even take it to a college level. You look at what's getting done in K-State right now. That is because of the management. That coach, you know, the coach down in K-State is one of a kind. That man will never be able to be replaced down there, and there's nobody like him in the country right now, as Bill Snyder has done. I mean, he is a one-of-a-kind coach, and he is doing something extremely special down there with second-rate kids. It can be done in any market, no matter the inefficiencies. You just have to have the ownership group that's committed to do it right, and Kansas City doesn't have that on either side of the Truman Sports Complex.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Troy, and I think – what I'll add to that is that, you know, a salary cap can't save you from bad decisions.
Nope, and it can hurt you.
That's what you need to eliminate first, and that's why the Chiefs are in trouble, because like Scott Pioli consistently has made bad decisions. And, you know, Dayton Moore, while he's made good decisions, I would say, in the draft, has made bad decisions literally everywhere else, in player development, in minor league coordination of the minor leagues, in you know, major league player moves. I mean, those are a little bit more half and half. I give him a little bit more credit for the major league moves, I think, than some, because he has had some that have worked out. But, I mean, ultimately, point being, you know, his decision-making track record isn't exactly what you'd want. And that's where it comes down to first.
And I'd say you did a great job with the Greinke trade.
The question is, yeah, the Greinke trade was good. I mean, the question is, you know, is it a competence issue with someone like a Dayton Moore or a Scott Pioli, you know, where they saying, are they really out there, given all they got, trying to make these good decisions and it just doesn't work? Or is it a behind-the-scenes issue where David Glass comes down to Dayton Moore and he says, hey, Dayton, listen, you've got $65 million to spend this year. I'm not going a dollar more. You do whatever you can. And, you know, so he's kind of hamstrung on what he can do. You know, if that's the case, then obviously as fans we should know about that, but we'll never know. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of – that's the problem is we don't know what they know, which is that they're either hamstrung and he's trying to do – I mean, if that's literally what David Glass has said, something like that, then Dayton Moore has done – he should be general manager of the year because he's done a fantastic job. But I don't think that's what he said. I think it's probably a little bit of half and half where maybe David Glass says, oh, I'll spend some little bit more money, but I want to see some – I want to see some results before I start spending the money, which is kind of backwards, but whatever. You know, so it's, I think it definitely has to come down to ownership, making the right decisions, and, I mean, it's kind of a chicken or the egg scenario of where exactly that comes from first, but it's got to come from that department first.
Yeah, they do run into a big problem, though, because of the environment, and like we've talked about, baseball. They have the strongest union in sports, by far. But when you also get things like, you know, just even within 6 months, a contract's market changes. You look at deals that have been signed in the last year and a half, and things that a pitcher got two off seasons ago, you know, would look silly right now. You look at guys like Brandon Lee, who's getting 3 years and $21 million. You know, he's not even – he's a borderline closer type guy. Jeremy Offelt – does very well for what he does, but he's getting, you know, $6 million a year. I mean, that's, you know, number three starting pitcher kind of money 3 years ago. And he's a middle reliever, you know. And then when you see guys like Cole Hamels and Matt Cain, they sign these extensions, you know, it limits the market. It limits the options that are out there. So you put a premium on the guys like Zach Greinke and Anibal Sanchez. Well, Zach Greinke's asking for $25 million a year. And he's probably going to get it from somebody, and that's just going to make the next guy's extension even bigger because the market's been set. You know, Anibal Sanchez, I like him. I think the Royals should sign him, but he's asking some teams for 7 years and $100 million. And that's the kind of stuff that, like, CeCe Sabathia should have gotten a couple years ago. And it's just it's out of control. It's crazy. And so you pay these guys who aren't – ace kind of guys. I mean, Greinke is, but you know, Sanchez, two kind of guy, you know, maybe 15 to 20 overall ranking in pitchers, and you're paying him like he's a top three guy. And so that just makes the next guy, you know, you have to pay more because the market's set there, you know, and then the next year, you know, there's inflation, revenues go up, people have more to spend. It's just, it goes crazy. And well, the Royals have to do something, either spend the money smarter, develop their players better, or, you know, try to compete monetarily. And right now they're not really in a position to do any of those three, which is really frustrating.
One thing about it, and we'll hit this and then we'll close out for the day because we've been doing this long enough, but I'll say this. Jeremy Guthrie wants $34 million for 3 years. I think, well, that he's not worth it. Jeremy Affeldt's not worth $7 million a year or $6 million a year, but Jeremy Guthrie is sure in heck worth, you know, $3 million a year more than $3 to $5 million a year more than Jeremy Affeldt. So I think as the Royals, you got to make that signing on Guthrie. You just got to do it. It doesn't block anybody. I don't care what the Royals try to tell you. That's not the case. We saw it last year. Even with everybody healthy, I wouldn't mind, you know, figuring out a way to throw one of those guys in the pen or even going a six-man rotation if you had to. But you got to do what you got to do to make it work. And the last point we were going to talk about today is everybody thought it was a lock that Joaquin Soria would be back in Kansas City, but all of a sudden, as you were talking about, the market inefficiency, pitching at a premium, former closer, even with two arm surgeries, the Royals were not going to give him $8 million in his option, and they shouldn't have. But now there's talk that somebody like the Yankees might. And all of a sudden, Soria may be a setup man for $7 or $8 million bucks a year with two arm surgeries in New York to his hero, Mariano Rivera, and then take over for Rivera after this year. And all of a sudden, that $8 million option was like something that apparently the Royals should have picked up. And nowhere in baseball logic or sense should you do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cooled down a little bit. Like last week, there was a lot more talk about Soria and who, you know, teams he was talking to. But you know, you're right. I mean, if it gets to where there's a bidding war on Soria, either in you know the number of years or the number of you know annual salary, the Royals have no need to compete for that. I mean, it'd be great to have him back. Sentimental reasons, you know, the guy's been one of the best relief pitchers in franchise history, you know, two-time All-Star, you know, seems like a really nice guy. I think people probably like him in the clubhouse, but the Royals really don't need Joaquin Soria as badly. I mean, we saw it last year. The bullpen was great last year, and there was no Joaquin Soria all year. And Greg Holland is fine. Kelvin Herrera is fine. They can definitely fill those roles. Even a guy like Lewis Coleman, who doesn't stand out in any way, he did very well. So you've got pieces all the way down that you just don't need a guy like Soria in the bullpen.
And, I mean, you can definitely get by with what you have in a bullpen. I mean, even if you go farther down and you start talking about, although he didn't do well his first start, but you start talking about a Ryan Verdugo, or maybe if you do sign a starting pitcher and everybody works out, you got a Will Smith out of the bullpen, you know, in long relief if need be, or a couple three innings in the middle one day. You know, there's plenty of relief to be had. I don't think you had Soria. Jeff, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, it's cool. I think just had a little bit to add, and that was I think the Royals should offer him some. I think they should offer him a one-year contract for about $2 million. You know, I think that's ultimately all he's worth. And if someone offers him a cent over that, say, you know, God be with you, Joaquin Soria, because, you know, it was fun. Type of a deal, because it's just he's coming off two arm surgeries, and the fact that Greg Holland is better, he's better than Joaquin Soria is. You know, maybe not Joaquin Soria from 3 years ago yet, but who knows? Maybe Greg Holland next year will be better than that 2010 Joaquin Soria where he had the 32 straight saves or however many it was. You know, the Royals do not need Joaquin Soria. They showed it last year, just like you guys both said. So, I mean, I think they should give him an offer because there is a possibility he has some talent there. And I'd like to see Joaquin Soria stay in Kansas City just because he, you know, he's stuck with the team. But, you know, he's been here for however many years now, and he's been a good part of this team. So I'd like to see him be here. But, yeah, if it gets into a bidding war where it's anywhere over, you know, at two, maybe you could convince me to $3 million. But if it's over that, then, you know, peace out, Soria. It's been great.
Well, and I think with that, we're going to call it a night. We've been doing this a while, at least 45 minutes, according to this last recording that I'm looking at here. So it's another typical Roman report. But I tell you, I was listening to our friends over at the Pine Tar Press podcast, and they have the same problem we do. They get talking about something, and they can't shut up. And next thing you know is you got a two-hour podcast from them, too. And so for the people that are out there, like Greg, that love this kind of stuff, you know, it's nice for them to get the nice long shows. But if you didn't check it out, we didn't talk about this at the beginning of the show. If you didn't check it out, please go back and check out last week's show with Jason Adam and Ryan Verdugo. High-quality show. At one point, I actually said, yeah, this show looks to be about 55 minutes, and that was about the 65-minute mark. So that shows you how well I can guesstimate the interviews versus actual time that we talk, too, on top of everything else. So, but on that note, I think we're going to get out of here tonight. A couple of upcoming notes for you just to hang on to and put in the back of your hat. No show next week. It is Thanksgiving. Have a great Thanksgiving. And we are thankful for every person that has downloaded this show, has come to Kelly's and said you've appreciated it, you know, that has been involved in this show in any way, shape, or form.
Except for that one guy.
Except that one guy, yeah.
That one guy, man.
Our countless guests. our numerous co-hosts, all the people that have been involved in this show the last couple of years, thank you so much for being part of our family. So after Thanksgiving, we'll come back. I'm hoping to have a guest following that week. I have somebody in mind that I might reach out to, somebody y'all are very familiar with, and But I don't want to say anything in case I can't pull it off. If we don't have a guest that week, then the week following, sometime after the 29th, the top 10 will run on BP, Baseball Prospectus, who, by the way, have added a number of amazing writers. So when you're not reading Kings of Kauffman or Echo Sports, I hope you're giving $5 a month to the great folks over at BP and reading all the great content over there. MLB Depth Charts joined them today, I found out.
Yep.
It's one of their new additions. And all of his free content will continue to be free, but all of his paid content will be included in the BP subscription now. So that's really a nice addition for them. But from BP, head of, I'm not sure what his actual title is, but head of prospects, essentially, Jason Parks will be joining us sometime after the 29th when they release the top 10 Royals prospects. And then, of course, he's going to join us. He's a great friend of the program. Absolutely amazing.
Always a great guest.
I mean, when you email him and he says, I always have time for you guys, that's something cool.
That was awesome when you forwarded that email.
Yeah. And if we shoot him an email every now and again, we'll hear something funny that's related to Jason Parks or something, and it'll make us laugh. So, like Bubba and Parks, a new morning show for 8:10 or something, you know. That Jason Parks and Bubba Starling, Bubba and Parks, your new morning show. He got a kick out of that one. Somebody had sent us that, or it came up somehow. I don't remember how. And, you know, so he'll be on, getting back to the point. He'll be on, and then sometime in December, we're going to be joined by Jay Jaffe. I honestly have no idea what we're going to talk to Jay Jaffe about. We may talk to Jay Jaffe about being Jay Jaffe for a half hour or so. Because I think that would be...
find something to talk to him about.
I think it's going to be absolutely amazing. So I'm real excited to get him on the air. I'm still working to get Brandon McCarthy. If anybody wants to help me pester him, at bmccarthy32, and at the_miss_McCarthy, I think it is. We'd love to get both of them on, Amanda and Brandon. We'd love to get both of them on to the show. So keep pestering them to come on the Royal Man or the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and that'll be a lot of fun. I do have a super special guest that will be on sometime between the winter meetings and spring training. I know that's quite the gap, but that is exactly what he's told me. And this is a show that is going to be exclusive to only the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and it's going to be one hell of a guest, and people are going to be real excited for it. So I'm real excited about it, and I know you guys are too.
We know who he's talking about, so we're definitely excited.
Lesky's giving me a hard time because I won't give him any insight to who it is. And I'll teach him to keep guests from us and not tell us who he's having on. So, go download those guys too. Go download the Pine Tar Press podcast. We love those guys. Go download the Inverted W too. I don't know if they're doing off-season shows. Great guys. They're going to do a live show at Kelly's, I think. We're going to help them, or I'm going to help them out with that before I go to Arizona in March. But on that note, I think we'll get out of here. How about that, guys?
Sounds good.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you after Thanksgiving. Probably one show before Jason Parks, and then we'll have Jason Parks and Jay Jaffe and much, much more exciting baseball all through the winter and into spring training, which hopefully we'll have some training coverage this year as well. Until next week, for Michael Engel and Jeff Herr and for all the references to Dave Lesky, and everybody that's listened to us over the last 2 years, thank you very much. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
For Mitch Album.
Yeah, for Mitch Album. Can't forget Mitch Album. We love you, Mitch. Give us a call. RoyalManReport@gmail.com. Send us some emails. Let us know what you think. We'll talk to you next week. Go Royals.